Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. First, charges today in Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. We'll get the details. And we'll look at what's coming this week in the biggest tax overhaul push in decades. Republicans are girding for lightning-fast action, if they can pull it off, on a plan they hope to roll out Wednesday. This hour, On Point, we look at who wins, who loses, and what's coming in the GOP tax push. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you see coming on taxes? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. First today, big news in Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. President Trump's former campaign chairman and chief strategist, Paul Manafort, and Trump campaign official and Manafort aide, Richard Gates, appeared before a federal judge this afternoon pleading not guilty to charges of conspiracy against the United States, conspiracy to launder money, and several others, a dozen counts in all. And another Trump campaign advisor, George Papadopoulos, has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about a meeting with a professor with close ties to the Kremlin about dirt, quote-unquote dirt, on Hillary Clinton. Joining me from Washington is Bob Cusack, editor-in-chief of The Hill. Bob, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Tom.
Can we go first to Paul Manafort and Richard Gates? Conspiracy against the United States, what is at the heart of these charges?
There's a lot here. I mean, when you look, you break it down, there's money laundering, allegedly. This was not a big surprise because, remember, Manafort's home was raided in July. But basically, when you lobby for any type of foreign agent, you have to register with the Department of Justice. The indictment says that Manafort and Gates were both unregistered agents for this pro-Kremlin political party in Ukraine. They also retained lobbying firms and were allegedly not honest about what they were doing. And that the indictment really goes after Manafort specifically because of his quote-unquote lavish lifestyle. So the Mueller and his prosecutors are making the case that he was laundering more than $18 million through various bank accounts and he was not paying taxes on them, and also highlighting his lavish lifestyle, how much he was spending on rugs, for example. So this is a serious ramping up of the investigation and alleged crimes. It's very serious.
And Rick Gates, his aide and longtime colleague, the same charges against Mr. Gates?
Yes, that they were working in tandem and that they both were not honest about what they did. They both did not register with the Department of Justice. And so now it is important to note here that there is nothing in the indictment that shows what Manafort did or not knew when he was with the Trump campaign. Now, maybe that information is coming, but at the same time, it was not in this indictment.
The work done in Ukraine that he's in trouble for now with these charges was for Viktor Yanukovych, who was the former Ukrainian president, very pro-Russia politician, fled to Russia after he basically got thrown out there. Is there in these indictments any direct link between, at this point, between Paul Manafort Rick Gates and a charge of any kind of collusion with the Trump campaign that's named or cited here?
No, not yet anyway. And I think though we are at just the beginning, we're not at the end, and there's a long, long way to go. Now, there's been a lot of speculation that Mueller is trying, the special counsel here, he is trying to flip Manafort, that Manafort knows a lot of information and is not giving it up. So by putting this indictment in, which could lead to Manafort going to jail for the rest of his life, it's a lot of pressure to reveal or strike some type of deal of what he knew and to tell Mueller that. Now, for the record, both Manafort and Gates have pled not guilty.
Wouldn't the leverage, Mueller's leverage, have been greater before the indictment? I mean, he'd say, you know, if you don't help me, if you don't flip, I'm going to bring these charges up against you. Wouldn't it have been stronger then? Does this indicate that Manafort has held out on him?
Well, I think it does it does suggest that Manafort has held out on him, but also that Mueller has, this information, if true, is very damning and is very serious. And, you know, especially when you're conspiring or allegedly conspiring against the United States and not paying your taxes and not telling the government what you're doing. Also, if you have foreign bank accounts, the indictment says there are reporting requirements that he did not follow. So I think he's just laying it out, and there were leaked reports that Mueller had told Manafort he's going to be indicted. Maybe Manafort didn't believe it, but now it's here.
And then Papadopoulos, George Papadopoulos. Who is he? What did he do? What did he plead guilty to?
This is interesting. He pled guilty for lying to authorities on it. He's a former campaign aide with the Trump campaign. Now, he and a Russian professor were in discussions soon after he joined the campaign, and the Russian professor allegedly offered quote-unquote dirt on Hillary Clinton. And then Papadopoulos, he tried to set up a meeting with higher-ups within the Trump campaign. But interestingly, those meetings never occurred. So there's a lot of questions that indictment raises. And certainly that's the more interesting one as far as potential collusion. But again, there's no smoking gun on that point, on collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia.
But Papadopoulos has pled guilty. He said yes. What, that he told the FBI he talked to this professor before he worked for the Trump campaign. In fact, it happened while he was working for the Trump campaign, and he said guilty.
Yeah, and it's another indication that you can't lie to federal authorities, because you can just go to jail for just doing that. So obviously they had other information, and his story was not corroborating. And then he admitted that, yes, he did lie to them, which is a crime in itself.
Is there a clear signal in these indictments, these charges, and this guilty plea of where the Mueller investigation may be heading? Is there anything you can say?
It's tough to say. I think it's safe to say that this is heading somewhere, and Mueller is very serious about this. You know, before the indictments came down last week, there were some Republicans on Capitol Hill saying, well, maybe these investigations need to wrap up. It's been a long time, and remember, their congressional committees are also investigating.
Yep.
So
yep.
I think that we don't know yet, but we don't know the full story.
Bob Cusack, editor-in-chief of The Hill, with us today from Washington. Bob, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
I want to turn to tax reform. Joining me from Washington, Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter for Bloomberg, closely following the tax plan that has been under wraps but will soon be unwrapped by Republicans in Congress. Sahil Kapoor, welcome back to One Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be back, Tom. Thank you.
This is a big, big deal. If it goes through, it would be, as envisioned, the biggest change in American tax policy in many decades, maybe back as far as 1986. We're going to look at the details, but just remind us of the lightning fast track that Republicans hope to push this through on. When are they going to start to really unveil this, and when do they hope to have it a done deal?
It's a great question, and you're right. 1986 is the comparison they keep making. They intend to release a draft of the legislation for the first time we've seen any legislative text on taxes from this Congress on Wednesday. That's the House Ways and Means Committee. Their plan is to mark it up the following week, pass it through the House by Thanksgiving. Then the Senate needs to follow suit. They may be operating on a bit of a parallel track while the House moves, but the Senate also wants to get it done around Thanksgiving, and that would leave December to reconcile the differences between the two chambers and send it to the president's desk. This would be a miracle if they pull off something this ambitious in this short a period of time, but they feel like they need to do something by the end of the year and show they have a major legislative accomplishment.
Has there ever been a tax package with this scale of ramification passed in such a short time? You know, there haven't been like lots of hearings. It's been completely under wraps. It'll be shown and then boom, straight to the goal.
I can't think of any major piece of legislation outside crisis moments like 9/11 and maybe the financial crash of 2008 that have moved this quickly. That is the speed they're aiming for right now. So
why?
To your point, no. Well, they promised over and over again that they will deliver major tax reform in the calendar year 2017. The markets have shot up. A lot of investors are riding on the hope of a big corporate tax cut and a pass-through tax cut and a rate cut and all these other things. And what Republicans are afraid of is, number one, going home for Christmas empty-handed, telling their constituents, we accomplished no major piece of legislation this year. They're not repealing Obamacare. They're not building a wall. They're not doing infrastructure. So they have an economic imperative to you know, prevent the markets from losing confidence and tanking, and they have a political imperative to be able to argue that, you know, they didn't just sit around all year twiddling their thumbs.
But why keep it under wraps until just days before they hope to start voting?
Right. So many reporters and you know, industry groups have been trying to get their hands on the details. It has not gone very well. This is an extremely secretive process. And the reason, as I understand it, is that they don't want the lobbyists and the people who would lose out from some of the trade-offs they're making, some of these deductions and loopholes they're closing, to get a wind of this and to mobilize and to organize and to kill these proposals. They are trying to get this done swiftly. And you know, they want to keep the lobbyists off balance. They want to keep them dizzy and pass it while they're not organized.
It's being described repeatedly by the president and others as a huge win for the middle class. Is there a consensus among the people who know taxes and looking at the likelihood of what's coming that that's true or not?
A few things. All we have right now is a broad framework with a lot of blank spaces.
Yeah, but it's
right?
got some pretty big assertions in it about the likely elements of this.
Absolutely. So what the biggest blank spaces are the middle class blank spaces, which is why it's hard to really understand what it would mean. The one piece that we know would benefit the middle class that they're doing is doubling the standard deduction. It's around $6,000 right now for individuals. It would go up to about $12,000. They also talk about wanting to expand the child tax credit from the current $1,000, but we don't know how high that would go. We do know that the things they have proposed, the Tax Policy Center, which is a nonpartisan research group in Washington, studied that and found that 80% of the benefits, we're talking about $5 to $6 trillion, would go to the top 1% of earners. So what they have proposed would certainly benefit the rich more than the middle class.
I'm reading David Leonhardt today in the New York Times saying Trump's plan would not actually cut taxes for many middle class families. It would raise them. I want to come back and look at exactly what that might mean, what it does for wealthier Americans. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Embody DNA. Ghouls and goblins aren't real, but your sweet tooth might be. Find out if there's one lurking in your DNA, keeping you close to the candy bowl. With Embody DNA, you can take an at-home test to reveal the traits that could be impacting your weight loss, fitness, and nutrition. Discover your traits today at embodydna.live/WBUR.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what to look for in the GOP tax plan this week. Who wins, who loses, the battle ahead in Congress. Sahil Kapoor is with us from the Bloomberg News, national political reporter there. You can join us this hour. What do you see coming in the tax plan? Are you worried about your 401k, your retirement, after all the money that's surged to the top of our economy, to the wealthy? What do you think about the tax breaks here for the rich? Is it worth cutting taxes now this way if it means deeper deficits, or do you see this triggering growth that will outstrip the deficit numbers kind of baked in here? President Trump told Fox Business last Wednesday that if the Republican tax plan unveiled later this week passes, it will be historic.
This will be the biggest tax cut in history, in the history of our country, and that's great. And we need it, because right now our country's about the highest taxed, or certainly one of the highest taxed in the world, and we can't have that.
Okay, well, I mean, he thinks we need it, and maybe we do, but that statement that he's made for a couple of years now, that we're the highest taxed, or one of the highest taxed in the world, been repeatedly called out as false. Below the, if you look at the 39-nation average, I mean, we're way down the list in terms of percent of GDP from American taxes. But the president likes to say highest taxed or something like it in the world. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham told Fox News Radio the political stakes are high for the GOP.
I think all of us realize that if we fail on taxes, that's the end of the Republican Party's governing majority in 2018. We'll lose the House, probably lose ground in the Senate. So it's important that we pass tax reform in a meaningful way. If we don't, that's probably the end of the Republican Party as we know it.
High political stakes, but high stakes for all Americans here. We'll hear a couple of perspectives on this in a moment. Sahil, we've heard in the last week and more about a couple of things that appeared to be controversial. One was 401k. Now you can save without taxes on the $18,000. There was a proposal to cut that down to $2,400. That's a big whack down. A lot of Americans fled to the 401k plan when defined benefit pensions went away, and this looked like blowing a hole in that. The president said that's not going to happen. Where does that stand now, Sahil?
We don't know. This is one of the big mysteries in the tax plan. And we know that the tax writers in the House Republican Conference have looked to 401ks because they are struggling to find revenues to balance out these trillions of dollars in rate cuts. Now, Kevin Brady, who is the chairman of the Tax Writing Committee, has said this is very much on the table. He is looking at changes to 401ks in retirement and I guess the tax status of retirement benefits. They have talked about reducing the tax-exempt amount of contributions to $2,400. But this would be a significant revenue raiser, and it would substantially limit a benefit that many middle-class Americans have enjoyed. So this is one of those things we're going to find out on Wednesday. The president is not on that page, so this is a real split, it seems, between the two sides.
It would also mean, and they have to keep this sort of measured deficit within $1.5 trillion. I mean, that much they're willing to say is coming here. If they don't do that, then they lose the capacity to pass all this with just the majority, and they've got to get Democrats in. It's going to be challenging enough, I guess, just to get enough Republicans in. But the taxes would still be forgiven at some point. I mean, this would help them get revenue now, but it would lose revenue for the federal government down the road when people actually retire and go back to the deficit that way, right?
Right. So this is precisely the problem that you're putting your finger on here. In the first decade, it would raise revenues for the government. But what the Republicans are trying to do is meet that $1.5 trillion target in the first decade, in the out years, in the second and third decades. This proposed change they're making, especially if they switch to these so-called Roth accounts, which are structured differently, mm-hmm. would lose money for the government.
It's a kind of a how you keep the books thing here to make it
it's
look
a
one
gimmick.
Way or another.
It's a gimmick. I've heard this word over and over again from people who are one step removed from the process, but who are talking to these tax writers. They are looking at any and every way to get that number down to $1.5 trillion.
Are there deficit hawks in the Republican Party now, as we reach the end of 2017, who are going to protest here? In past years, we have seen Republicans go absolutely to the wall over deficits. Are there Republicans who are going to do that now with this plan or not?
There seem to be very few, Tom. Republicans voted all but one Republican in the Senate voted for this budget. All but 20 in the House voted for this budget. And very few made objections to the $1.5 trillion deficit number, which is how much they can cut taxes on net in the first decade. The person I would keep my eye on here is Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee. He is retiring. He has famously feuded repeatedly with President Trump in pretty personal and sort of ugly ways. And he has insisted that he's not going to vote for a final tax bill if it adds a penny, a cent, to the deficit, in his words. So he's going to be a difficult vote to get for that reason. He said he voted for the budget resolution because he views it as meaningless just to get on the debate. There are not a lot of Bob Corkers, though. There may be a few in the House in the so-called Liberty Caucus, which is tiny. It's only a handful of people who have, somewhat more purist conservative views. But for the most part, this is a pretty dizzying 180 turn among Republicans after spending 8 years, objecting to President Obama raising the deficit.
One of the other things contemplated to raise that revenue would be to take away the deduction of state taxes. And in states where those taxes are relatively high, that caused an outcry last week among Republican legislators. Where does that stand now?
This is the single biggest pile of money, Tom, that Republicans are putting on the table to raise. This is a $1.3 trillion deduction over 10 years that they're proposing to eliminate. It mostly benefits upper middle income and upper income Americans in high tax states like New York, New Jersey, and California. They are planning to wind this down significantly. Now, they propose initially
to take away the deduction.
To take away the deduction. They propose eliminating it entirely at first. President Trump proposed it. Yeah. The Unified Framework proposed it. Now, over the weekend, Kevin Brady told us that he is planning on keeping the property tax deduction part of this in the legislation he proposes to unveil. So this is a bit of a give. This is a bit of a concession to his members, his Republican members in New York and New Jersey. There are about a dozen of them that objected and voted against the budget, and their votes could be critical. So it sounds like they're doing a little wheeling and dealing on that. This would hurt some middle-class families if it does pass, though, in those states.
Sahil Kapoor, please stand by there at Bloomberg in Washington. I want to bring in a couple more voices here. Steve Wamhoff joins us from Washington, Senior Fellow for Federal Tax Policy at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Brian Riedel joins us from Alexandria, Virginia, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, focuses on taxes and budget, former Chief Economist to Ohio Republican Senator Rob Portman. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And I should say, Steve was a senior tax policy analyst for Bernie Sanders, 2015 to 27, earlier this year. Steve, I guess I'll come first to you. Where do you see the benefit and cost of what's likely coming here landing?
Well, based on the details that have been provided so far, on September 27th, they provided a lot of details about the plan, and based on any reasonable interpretation of that information, we have found that this plan definitely is one that is structured to benefit the wealthiest 1%. And we found that over 2/3 of the benefits would go to the richest 1% of Americans. Only about 6.5% of the benefits would go to the middle 20% of income earners. That group of people that is literally the middle class that President Trump talks about, they would only get a tiny portion of the benefits. And this is a plan that's going to cost well over $2 trillion over a decade. And part of the reason why it's structured this way is because some of these, the biggest provisions in the plan, the corporate tax cut, the special tax rate for other businesses that don't pay the corporate tax, those are things that are going to ultimately benefit the wealthiest Americans more than anybody else.
What about the argument that, yes, it may, but that will then turn around and flow back into the economy, and the economy will take off and everybody will be better off?
Well, that's really not supported by the evidence, I guess, in a few different ways. So for one thing, there's a lot of talk about the administration has tried to argue that cutting the corporate tax, for example, will eventually help workers. And the evidence just doesn't show that happening. So, for example, the last time we had a big reduction in the corporate tax rate in 1986, that was not followed by growth, really good growth in wages. Actually, that was what followed. That was a period of low wage growth, actually. So that isn't borne out by the evidence. And a lot of the arguments that these tax cuts will improve the economy so much that they'll partly pay for themselves or completely pay for themselves, well, that's not borne out by the evidence either. And that really has never happened. If you go all the way back to the 1981 tax cut that was enacted under President Reagan, you see even the Reagan administration at the end of the administration, Reagan's Office of Management and Budget put out a document that concluded that the 1981 tax cut cost hundreds of billions of dollars each year. So we just have no precedent in history for tax cuts creating the kind of growth that is being promised right now and the kind of benefits to working people.
Brian Riedel, your organization, the Manhattan Institute, pretty conservative, has been pretty tough on deficits over time. Are you not concerned about the deficits that are envisioned here? Are you counting on economic growth to somehow obviate those? How do you look at it, Brian?
Well, the cost of $1.5 trillion is notable. It would reduce revenues by about 3% over the projection over 10 years.
So you're minimizing it when you say 3%? Is that
Well, I mean, right now we're actually taxed above the historical average over the next 10 years per projection. This would bring us down to about the historical average of 17.4%. I would like to see as much of it paid for as possible. At the same time, the reality is the long-term deficits are completely a creature of Social Security, Medicare, health care. Social Security and Medicare face an $82 trillion deficit over the next 30 years.
Would this tax plan help deal with that, or would it make it necessary down the road to further cut Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security?
What I'm trying to say is whether or not these tax cuts can be sustained or not completely depends on whether we deal with Social Security and Medicare. If lawmakers do not have the courage to deal with entitlements, taxes will go up steeply regardless of what they do now. If they do address entitlements, these tax cuts can be sustainable. So my worry is, while these tax cuts are much smaller than a lot of the policies the Democrats are supporting, which would raise the deficit even more, I would like to see the cost minimized, and I would like to see the main drivers of the deficit addressed as well, because deficits at this size do matter.
When we're facing those challenges, does it make sense to you to provide what the consensus everywhere I'm reading here is, very large tax cuts to the wealthy in this country who have done incredibly well in recent years? Does that make sense to you, Brian?
Well, keep in mind, when we talk about these distributions and say, well, the 1% will get cut, you know, more than half, you know, more than the median.
Way more. I mean, this flows. You're talking about about pass-through and no estate tax and bringing corporate taxes down, and of course, which most of the benefit of that goes right in the pockets of owners. So it's way more, right?
Keep in mind that, first, on under this plan, the middle class will get a tax cut. I mean, the Republicans are not going to put out a plan that raises middle class taxes. They've made that clear. In terms of the amounts, keep in mind that 100% of the federal income tax is currently funded by the top 40%. 88% of the income tax is currently funded by the top 20%. If you put it in dollar terms, the top 1% on average pays $420,000 a year in income taxes, while the median voter pays $2,000 a year.
I mean, we get it, but that's also because we know that's where the money is. I mean, it's all flowed up there. You say it won't mean an increase for middle-class taxpayers, but I'm looking here at analysis by Tax Policy Center, and they see taxes going up if you make, 50 to 75 by 13% for a whole lot of people, 24% over time.
The Tax Policy Center score is incomplete because they didn't include the child credit expansion. The Republicans have already announced they're going to expand the child credit, and if you do so by $500 or more, that will ensure that there's virtually no tax hikes for the middle class. So the TPC left out, because the Republicans hadn't given the specific amount, they left out the main provision that was going to make it lower for everybody. But going back to the progressivity point, you can't cut taxes by more than about $2,000 for the middle-class family on the income side because they only pay $2,000. And so my point is not that we should just cut taxes for the rich. My point is, even if you do a proportional tax cut, it's obviously the people who are going to pay paying $420,000 will save more in dollars than the people paying $2,000. That's just math.
But I get it that you have a principled objection to taxes and taxes that feel too heavy to you, but why does it make sense? Because the wealthy are doing incredibly well. So why cut the estate tax? Why make the go with the pass-through benefits here, which go to business owners? And there's no limit on that. No matter how rich you are, you're going to pay a much lower tax rate on that.
Well, keep in mind.
Why? I'm just curious why.
Well, keep in mind, the economy isn't exactly doing very well right now. I mean, we talk about, the economy doesn't need it, whatever. Right now, for the first time over the last 6 years, we've actually lost businesses in America. We have fewer businesses than we used to. It's been the weakest recovery since the 1940s. The low unemployment rate excludes 4 million people who are no longer looking. Median family income is at 2007 levels. We need to get this economy going.
You think this will do that? This tax plan will charge it up?
I think the corporate side certainly will. I mean, the other guest said there's very little evidence that cutting business taxes work. That's just not true at all. The academic literature is very clear that our corporate tax rate right now is an outlier. We have the second highest rate in the world.
Yeah, but the effective rate is much lower, and the academic record is not clear that these tax changes, the trickle-down, will produce an economic
highest,
it's not clear.
The third highest, even if you take into account the deductions, we have the third highest effective rate in the G20, even if you take into account the deductions. That's why Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Bill Clinton have all been on the record for reducing our exorbitant corporate tax rate. That's why 33 of the 35 OECD companies have done it. It's not because Germany and France love rich people. It's because our corporate tax code right now is the worst of both worlds. We have a really high rate that sends jobs and investment overseas, but then actually raises almost no money because it stays overseas.
Sal Kapoor, is that the golden bullet here? You cut the corporate tax rate and the formal rate, and we let the good times roll?
That is, Tom, that is the centerpiece of what the Republicans are trying to do. As your previous guest just pointed out, the rich do pay most of the taxes, which is why if you cut individual income taxes, the rich are going to be the biggest beneficiaries. But the corporate taxes and the so-called pass-through taxes for partnerships and other closely held companies, that is a real goal of what President Trump and Republicans want to do. They set a red line on these two things, cutting the corporate rate down to 20% from 35% and cutting the pass-throughs rate to 25%. And yes, you're correct, the effective U.S. corporate tax rate is more like 24%. It's in line with the other OECD industrialized countries, even if the statutory rate is higher.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what to look for in the GOP tax plan this week, who wins, who loses, the battle ahead in Congress. It's going to have to be a fast one. Republicans want to have this passed in the House at least by Thanksgiving, with the whole thing wrapped up by the end of the year. Steve Wamhoff is with us from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, was a tax policy analyst for Bernie Sanders. Brian Riedel is with us. He worked for Ohio Republican Senator Rob Portman as chief economist, now at the Manhattan Institute. Sahil Kapoor is with us from Bloomberg. He's been covering all this for them. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Is it worth cutting taxes now this way if it means even deeper deficits? Do you buy that this may unleash a wave of economic growth that will take care of that? And Republicans, is this a do-or-die tax cut for you? And who's it for? Here was Rob Portman, Brian's old boss, on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday, saying that a tax plan that encourages investment, improves the economy, will help grow the economy and reduce the deficit.
For the first time in over 30 years, we're going to reform the tax code. Provide a middle-class tax cut, which is really important, but also to encourage more investment for more jobs, more earnings, and to improve the economy. And what we've said is, if we could just improve the economy slightly, instead of the 1.9% growth that the Congressional Budget Office says is going to happen, let's take it 0.4% more. If we can do just that, then we begin to actually reduce the deficit.
Bingo. Just reduce it if you get that growth. Okay, there's that assertion. Here's, on the other hand, a very different view. Nancy Pelosi, House Minority Leader, Democrat, of course, on Thursday on the chamber's floor, criticizing the budget passed last week, saying it opens the door for the GOP to pass tax reform, the one coming this Wednesday.
The budget on the floor today reveals the true cruelty behind the Republicans' tax plan. What words would be best to use it? It's looting the middle class. Massive looting of the middle class. Rip off.
Looking for really hot words there to describe this. Interesting. Mid-October, you had a group known as the Patriotic Millionaires came out with an ad highlighting why a number of wealthy Americans are opposed to these tax cuts.
The Republicans are going to give me a huge tax cut. You know what I'm going to do with the money? I'm going to put it in the stock market. And that way, I'll continue to be rich and everyone else will continue to be poor.
Not one penny of tax cuts should go to people like me. We are already doing fine. Thank you.
Cutting my taxes is not going to do anything to help most of the rest of the people in this country.
The wealthy will get wealthier. The deficit's going to skyrocket.
I am saying no to the Trump tax plan.
And those are millionaires. Of course, there are others who are pushing very, very hard for this. Let's get our callers in here. Baltimore, Debbie's calling. Hi, Debbie. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. What do you see, Debbie?
I see misery.
Why?
And it will increase the misery index. Well, all we have to do is look at history. Look at the Reaganomics tax cuts of the 1980s. It didn't help. In fact, it hurt the average person. And what's going to happen is it will gut the budget. There will be no investment in business because people by nature will hoard that money. You just heard some of those millionaires say that. They'll invest it in the stock market. They'll stash it away. They'll hire automated workers rather than invest in workers, or they'll send it more overseas.
You're not buying it, and we've got it. Debbie, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Christina in Fort Knox. Hey, there's a lot of gold. Kentucky, Christina, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on board with this at all. By giving tax breaks to our one percenters and not giving it to our poor middle class, I think it's just just going to kill our economy. They're going to invest it in themselves. They're going to keep it for themselves. Where if we give the tax break to the lower economy, to the lower incomes and the middle class, they're going to invest it back into education to improve their own profits, their own wages, so that way they can, and over time, they'll be investing that right back into the economy, and we'll be better off for it.
So you're saying no thanks on this? I mean, we don't know all the details yet, but from what you see so far, you're saying no thanks.
Yes.
Christine, I appreciate your call as well. Sile, who's pushing where on this? I mean, we heard millionaires there saying this doesn't make sense, but clearly you've got others who are pushing hard for this. If some of these analyses are right, you're going to have a lot of Republican voters who there's an open question whether they'd get much of this benefit or not.
Right.
What's the sector that's pushing? You know, I know a promise has been made. We will cut taxes. But Republicans also, you know, historically promised to cut deficits, and this isn't really focused on that. What's the big driver?
Well, there are two big constituencies here, Tom. The number one is corporate America. They love the corporate tax rate cut to 20%, and they like the fact that they could bring the repatriation changes that are being talked about. They could bring their foreign money back home. Of course, there is a question as to how much of that will be invested rather than paid out to their shareholders in dividends. Let me read you a little bit of a recent poll that indicates where the public is on this, on President Trump's tax proposals and the proposals being put out there by Republicans in Congress. 34% of Americans favor them, 52% oppose them, but there is a huge partisan split. 70% of Republicans favor them, just 9% of Democrats support these tax proposals. We're looking at a partisan vote if this happens, much like healthcare, and I think it's going to be a knockdown, drag out battle. It's going to be in some ways harder to do than healthcare. They have the constituencies there.
Where's the knockdown, drag up? I mean, are Democrats on board? I suppose most are not. So it'll be Republicans who make the difference here. And to have knockdown, drag out, you've got to have some Republicans saying no. Are they there?
They very well may be. We've not seen a bill with significant trade-offs that hurts, you know, people that live in Republican districts and Republican states very much. We have state and local deduction, which mostly hurts Democratic districts and states. So once this comes out, we're going to see, I think, some Republicans grumble about various provisions in there. The second constituency, Tom, is conservative activists. They love the idea of cutting taxes across the board. They don't want the government to particularly have a lot of revenue down the road because they don't support these entitlement programs. They want to cut them, and they want the government to do less overall. So those are the two driving forces. I think since the 1980s, Republicans have fashioned themselves as the party of tax cuts. And this is a critical test. If they control the House, the Senate, and the White House and cannot deliver this, the question is going to be asked, what can they do? What is the point of this party?
Steve, can you explain the pass-through business here? What changes are envisioned there? What that means? This is the rate that businesses or people who, you know, make themselves businesses would pay. What's the change that the GOP is pushing for, Steve?
So right now, what we call pass-through businesses, those are the businesses that are not required to pay the corporate income tax. So instead, those profits are just subject to the personal income tax. The owners of the pass-through business will report those profits on their own personal income tax return, and that's how they're taxed.
But if you're making a bunch of money, the personal rate is higher, right? So what's the break here?
Right. So what President Trump is proposing is to have a special lower rate for income that comes from these pass-through businesses, and that would be 25%. So if you think about it, if you have someone who may have some own a corner store or something like
yeah.
that, like a true small business.
Yeah.
Their income tax, their marginal income tax rate might already be 25% or lower than 25%. So they're not going to benefit from this. It's really only going to be someone who's particularly well off. And it is the case that most of the income that comes from these pass-through businesses goes to like the biggest of the pass-through company. So,
this is sort of like what private equity has had.
Hedge fund, yeah.
Right, private equity, hedge funds, we're talking millions and millions and millions.
Right, exactly. Like Bechtel is the company that built the Hoover Dam and built all these huge
yeah.
projects, they're a pass-through business, right? You might think of them as a huge corporation, but they are a pass-through business. And the owners of that company would benefit from this special tax rate that the Trump administration has proposed.
Brian, what's the point of that? That's a whole lot of cash that will go straight to the pockets of very wealthy Americans. Some have said, well, okay, but if you want to do that, put a cap on it, of some kind of cap, $1 million or something. So it's not just money flowing into the pockets of the super wealthy. But what's the point of it, Brian?
Well, the idea is to encourage business. Everybody likes to beat up on business and say they hoard money and whatever.
Well, we know that they're sitting on more cash than they ever have in history, as far as I know. So that's not a weird characterization. That's a fact already, isn't it?
If I could finish an answer, please.
Yes.
If I could finish an answer without being cut off 5 seconds into it.
Yeah, but you can't assert falsehoods or misleading things without expecting to be challenged.
Oh, yeah. I was in the middle of a sentence. Could you let me finish my sentence?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Jesus. Even when people say small businesses are hoarding cash, what does hoarding cash mean? They're not putting it in the basement like Scrooge McDuck. They're investing it in their business, or they're investing it in the economy. It's not cash sitting in safes. Even if they put it in the bank, it gets lent out to others to spend. Keep in mind, 88% of all business there's an 88% correlation between business investment and jobs. So while we like to beat up on businesses, the Republicans are saying, if we're going to bring the corporate tax in line with international standards, we don't want to have small businesses paying a marginal tax rate that's twice as high as corporations of 39.6. They're saying, let's encourage business investment. Let's encourage the 88% correlation between business investment and jobs, and help the economy basically create jobs. That's the idea.
But Brian, here's the point. Is there a shortage of cash out there right now for investment?
Well, that's debatable, and I think that's a fair question to ask.
Which is what I was asking.
Right, and I would show the evidence that I've seen is that small businesses will expand with lower rates. They will hire more people. That has been the correlation, even in recent years. When you can encourage business investment, there is an 88% correlation with job growth.
Then why not cap this? It's not capped now. So ride all the way up to the biggest corporations and hedge funds. This is just cash in the pocket. Why not cap it if it's about small businesses?
I think there's a case for capping it at a certain point. But you know,
do you see any evidence that may happen?
No. Although there's going to be some compromise here, whereby compromise have been floated, whereby 70% of it would be taxed as income, and only 30% would be taxed as business, or vice versa. It's not a given right now that they're just going to allow anybody and any small businesses to pay the full low rate. It's going to depend on how much you have. It's going to depend on how they split up your income. And it's going to depend on the industry. And frankly, those are the challenging rules, because there are loopholes when you're writing those rules. And so what I'm going to be looking for Wednesday is to see if they can avoid the loopholes such that they can make it in a way that encourages business investment for the companies that need to most.
Sol Cooper, do you see any evidence that the GOP on this, which is a very big deal, this would be a lot of money going to hedge funds, private equity, and small businesses. But do you see any evidence that there's a serious effort to cap this so it wouldn't just be cash where there's already huge piles of cash?
Right. This is a great point that you bring up, because the pass-throughs rate, the pass-throughs tax cut they're talking about would raise the deficit by about $770 billion. And studies have found that about 70% of pass-through income directly flows to the top 1%. And because of that, yes, there has been discussion among Republicans as to putting guardrails on this 25% pass-throughs rate. The number one thing is that they want to prevent individuals who make personal income from reclassifying themselves as an LLC or sole proprietor, simply for the purpose of cutting their taxes down to 25% from the current 39.6% rate, or whatever they move that to. The second is to limit which kinds of businesses can potentially take advantage. Should this 25% rate just be for mom and pop corner shops, or should it be for massive closely held organizations like Trump Organization? They don't know yet. They may put limits on this to prevent, for instance, hedge funds and accountants and lawyers and doctors from taking advantage. But we don't know that. There's a strong push in the other direction. There are people. I spoke to Senator Orrin Hatch, the chairman of the Finance Committee, who's going to be writing the tax bill in that chamber, doesn't want any limits on that. He wants everybody to be able to enjoy it.
Steve Weimhoff, does that make sense to you?
No, I mean, the entire break makes no sense.
Why not for small business? I mean, if they'd hire, you know, if the corner store would hire more, that sounds good.
Well, that is interesting, but that's exactly the group of people who would not get this break. And there are
they would, you know, if they organized their business in the right way.
Right. Well, right. I mean, and if they were successful enough to have a marginal income tax rate of higher than 25%.
Okay.
Right, because that's what the Trump administration is proposing, is setting the top rate at 25% for these businesses. And we also should keep in mind there are breaks in the existing tax code for investment for small businesses as it is now. I think it's hard to avoid the fact that this plan really was geared towards, I guess, the most powerful interests who are pushing for this plan, which are, frankly, like the big companies. Some of those are corporations that pay the corporate tax. Some of those are pass-through businesses. But when you think about it, that's even though there's been a lot of different versions of this plan discussed, the thing that has been constant throughout it is corporations will pay less and these big pass-through businesses will pay less. That's been constant throughout this entire debate.
Brian Riedel, you must be counting noses, counting votes. What do you see here? Do you anticipate that by the time New Year's rolls around, we'll have a new tax regime in this country? Brian? Steve, what's your best guess?
I think it's going to be hard for them. I think that, depending on which poll you look at, a third or less than a third of the country supports this plan. I think that, there's a lot of ideology within the Republican caucus that supports this. But the question is the fact that the American people really don't want this going to stop them from making the kind of change they want to make, which is what happened with their attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act.
We'll see. Brian, what's your read on this, Brian Riedel? You're mostly counting votes. Do you see this passing?
Sure. I don't think it's going to pass by Christmas, because once it's unveiled, the lobbyist feeding frenzy begins. They've mostly been handing out candy so far, but cut the tax cut from $3 trillion to about $1.5 trillion. Now the hard part's going to come where they take things away. I think it's going to be very difficult to pass by Christmas.
Sahil, what are you hearing from party leadership on Capitol Hill? Are they optimistic, or are they just, I guess they just have to go for it?
Anxious and desperate more than anything else. They are eager, extremely eager to get this done. But I'm with Brian. This is going to be very, very difficult. It could be scaled back. It could collapse entirely. And if they pull off a miracle, they might get it done by Christmas. But again, that would take a miracle.
And if it doesn't happen by Christmas, what happens? We're going into an election year.
They push it into the first quarter of 2018. They try to get this done by March before the primaries begin. But again, it's going to be much harder in an election year to get their members to take tougher votes, which is one of the key reasons they're so eager to get it done this year.
Sahil, thanks very much for being with us. Steve Wamhoff, Brian Riedel, thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.